Good morning. My name is Jonathan, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the H&R Acquisition of Primaris conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Mr. Peter Block. You may begin your conference.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for joining this special H&R REIT and Primaris REIT conference call. Please note that H&R and Primaris have each posted an investor slide deck to their respective websites, and we invite you to consult them for additional details about the transaction. Before we begin today's presentation, let me read a forward-looking statement. This presentation may contain forward-looking statements with respect to H&R and Primaris and their operations, strategy, financial performance, and condition. The actual results and performance discussed herein could differ materially from those expressed or implied by such statements. Such statements are qualified in their entirety by the inherent risks and uncertainties surrounding future expectations. Joining us for the call today are Tom Hofstedter, President and CEO of H&R REIT, and John Morrison, President and CEO of Primaris Retail REIT. I'd now like to turn the call over to Mr. Tom Hofstedter.
Thank you and good morning. I'm very pleased to announce a truly game-changing transaction for H&R last night. We entered into an agreement with Primaris with the unanimous support of both boards of trustees, whereby H&R will be offering to acquire 100% of the units of Primaris. Unit holders of Primaris will be entitled to elect to receive 1.13 staple units of H&R or $28 cash per unit, subject to a maximum cash of $700 million. The acquisition solidifies H&R's position as Canada's leading diversified REIT. We are excited to have this opportunity to acquire an irreplaceable and much sought-after enclosed shopping center portfolio. Primaris has similar businesses and operating philosophies with respect to asset and tenant quality and is well-positioned for the U.S. and international retail expansion and future growth. We are also acquiring a professional established management team which is expected to become our Canadian retail platform. Primaris has 35 high-quality retail properties totaling approximately 14.7 million square feet. It is Canada's third-largest owner-operator of enclosed shopping centers and boasts high occupancy and marquee anchor tenants, including 10 new Target stores. The transaction will create the largest REIT in Canada by enterprise value. We'll have 330 properties, almost 60 million square feet of leasable area, have a presence in 9 provinces and 28 states. It will increase the market cap of the combined REIT by 43% and increase our liquidity. We will have broader portfolio diversification geographically, by asset class, and by tenant base, reducing office exposure from 65% to 48% of NOI, while increasing retail from 17 to 39. It increases our gross leasable area by 31% and our pro forma NOI by 44%. With expected savings from synergies of up to $10 million over the next 2 years, the transaction will also be accretive to FFO. I would now like to turn over the call over to John Morrison of Primaris.
Thank you, Tom. I, too, am very excited by the opportunity created by this transaction. We share Tom's vision that combining these two high-quality portfolios will create significant value for both sets of unit holders. 6 weeks ago, we embarked on a process to surface maximum value in the face of a hostile bid. This announcement bears the fruit of that process as we present a superior transaction to our unit holders. The cash price of $28 for each Primaris unit represents a 22% premium over the $22.95 volume-weighted average price of Primaris units for the 20 trading days up to and including December 4, 2012, the day before KingSett announced its hostile bid for Primaris. The deal retains the valuable platform created by Primaris over the last 10 years to acquire, develop, and manage. Our unit holders are provided with the option to retain ownership in the enclosed shopping center asset class or to elect to receive immediate cash payment subject to proration. Our unit holders have the opportunity for a tax-deferred rollover for substantially all of the unit portion of the consideration. The deal also improves Primaris' distributions by 20% from the current analyzed rate of $1.27 to $1.53 pro forma. We are also confident the deal can get done and the business can be successfully integrated. H&R is a credible and reputable real estate investor with the financial capability and operational expertise. We are very proud of what we have built at Primaris. Since our IPO in 2003, we have consistently outperformed the TSX Composite Index and the TSX REIT Index. We have assembled a portfolio of 35 high-quality assets comprising 14.7 million square feet across the country. We are the third largest owner-operator of enclosed shopping centers in the country and the largest publicly traded REIT in that category. We have a diversified group of well-known marquee retailers as our tenants with no significant concentration from any individual tenant. And of course, we are well-positioned for the emerging U.S. and international retailer expansion into Canada, particularly Target, which are opening in 10 of our properties starting in just a few months. We have spoken to a number of our unit holders since the Kingset Hostel bid was launched in December, and there have been a couple of consistent points that we have heard from them. First, they were not prepared to tender to the Hostel bid because it failed to adequately compensate Primaris for the underlying value of our assets. And also, they wanted the opportunity to remain owners in the enclosed shopping center asset class in Canada. This deal satisfies both of these points. It also means our employees have the opportunity to continue to build on our many strengths now as part of Canada's largest REIT. We're very pleased that this deal eliminates the uncertainty that many of them were feeling since early December. Now I'll turn things back to Tom.
Thanks, John. Let me conclude with some additional transaction details, all of which you can find in the investor presentation posted on each of our websites. The proposed transaction will be structured as a plan of arrangement. The transaction is subject to the approval of two-thirds of Primaris units voted at a special meeting of Primaris unit holders and 50.1% majority of H&R units voted at a special meeting of H&R unit holders. It is expected that each of H&R and Primaris will prepare and mail meeting circulars to the respective investors within the next few weeks, and that the special unit holders meeting will be held in March. We will now turn over the floor to your questions, and I'll ask the operator to come back on to explain how that will work.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Alex Avery with CIBC. Your line is open.
Thank you. I was just hoping you could tell us a little bit about how you envision the combined entity being managed, given the fully internalized management platform that resides within Primaris.
Thanks, Alex. I'm glad you're actually asking that question, because we understand the sensitivities of our investors to that, and as such, given the expectation that we'll be retaining substantially all of the Primaris retail platform and operating the retail assets under the established management structure, our independent trustees and the external managers have agreed to reevaluate the terms of the existing property management agreement for the purpose of considering and implementing desirable amendments acceptable to both parties. This will conclude discussions relating also to the acquisition fee payable under the current agreement upon successful completion of this transaction. We really will try our best and attempt to have this revised agreement concluded prior to the release of our circular, but in either event, we assure you that it will be prior to the unitholder vote. Well, this will all be signed up and agreed to and disclosed to our unitholders.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Thanks, Alex.
Your next question comes from the line of Heather Kirk with National Bank Financial. Your line is open.
I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about the accretion. You've mentioned that it's accretive, and I'm just wondering if you can give us a sort of order of magnitude and what the time frame is for that accretion.
From the combined entity, you're referring to the accretion on FFO, AFFO, and I think the simple answer is we're not promoting accretion. We're promoting accretion through synergies that will be marginally accretive to FFO and AFFO, and not really significantly change our debt, the H&R's debt to gross after the transaction. I think the message that we're all trying to say is the transaction is going to increase H&R's size by $2 billion market cap, create liquidity, create a much larger company. The philosophies of both Primaris and H&R are identical. We're both very conservative. We buy, H&R buys long-term lease assets, not wanting to play the cycle game. Primaris' assets have been there forever, are 97.5% occupied, will continue to be 97.5% occupied. We're buying it at an implied cap rate that is, quite frankly, in the value of the market around 5.5, compares very favorably to recent transactions that have been in the market. So the way to look at this transaction is it's not a story of accretion. It shouldn't be a story of accretion. It should be a story of getting better, getting stronger, and buying it at a time when there's a game changer out there called Target, just being the first of one of the many international retail players that will be invading Canada, and invading Canada, changing our landscape. 10 of Primaris' property, representing a couple $1 billion of real estate, will be positively impacted by this move. And that's why smart guys like John Love knew exactly when to go ahead and look at Primaris as a potential target. If you take it as not as a game changer, but as have adding size, liquidity, strength, philosophies being the same, we at H&R are excited about buying a platform that with this platform, because we wouldn't be able to do it without the retail platform, quite frankly, gives us the knowledge base to expand and capitalize on the change of asset values that will occur as Target changes from $125 a square foot sales of a Zeller to a $300 a square foot sales of a Target, generating more foot traffic, hence generating more sales, hence generating more rent to us, and therefore not more value to our unit holders. That was a long-winded way of saying it's not an accretion story.
Okay. So just a follow-up question to that, which sort of ties into your comments with respect to the opportunity with Target. You obviously have deep development expertise, and I'm just wondering if you talked about what you see going forward in terms of maybe ramping up some of the development opportunities within the Primaris portfolio.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Primaris has around $400 million of targeted dollars to be spent upgrading their portfolio. They do have a Yonge Street redevelopment. They have potential lands available for redevelopment. There's opportunities in Burlington Mall. They can talk more. Primaris can talk more to the specifics. I think the platform is first upgrading the malls that become the obvious upgrade through the money invested in Target and improving the physical, and therefore then from there flowing into the physical and the attractive feature of the foot traffic that increases. As far as specifics, there is redevelopment done, and from a residential front, there's further enhancement from a retail front. You know what, I think I'll reserve part of that answer for further discussions at a later date with the development team within Primaris, who are a lot more able to answer that question. Do you want to take it, John, and add, talk a little bit about
what I think you covered it, Tom. You know, as we've discussed in the past, we have a lot of development activity underway in various stages of planning. Certainly, Target coming into our properties is part of it, but we also have other activities underway in terms of improving our assets in terms of the physicality of it, but also taking advantage of excess property, excess density, and quite simply demand for space in the malls, which sometimes drives a lot of that activity as well.
Okay, thanks very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Mario Saric with Scotiabank. Your line is open.
Good morning. Just with respect to the timing of the transaction, you know, Tom, you mentioned Target's a very exciting opportunity. You know, we've seen bond yields contract for, you know, the last 10, 15 years, and arguably we're at a trough at this point in time. You know, how much of the timing is related to perhaps H&R maybe wanting to get a bit more exposure to, you know, the cyclical economy as far as an improving economy and rents going forward?
You know, you have to back up in Canada and realize the real estate landscape has become very crowded. So the strategy, I wish I can say it's focused on something as smart as what you just said. I don't think it can be. I think the opportunity to buy $4.5 billion worth of prime real estate in Canada is a driver of the bus at a time when it's a game changer starting off with a Target. So I don't think it's an interest rate game, and I don't think it's a macro game. I think it's a micro. I think you see OPB jumping to buy real estate, increasing their exposure to Canadian real estate from 13% to a stated target of 25%. I think it's just, quite frankly, an opportunity like this never comes by, and it shouldn't come by. Primaris actually is a great company. There's no reason that there should have been a hostile bid to take it out to period. So the real driver is the opportunity that's here that never exists and that would never exist under normal circumstances other than someone initiating a hostile takeover. That is the real opportunity. Everything else that flows away is in the micro. The fact that H&R and Primaris both share debt that are above market protects us from an interest rate play. Cap rate compression is not what this is about, because this is about future drivers in rental rates that will increase the cap, that will decrease the cap rate and increase value to our unit holders. So it really, really is the opportunity that's once in a lifetime at a time when this, the changing landscape of retail is going to make tremendous value for these type of assets, which will never be duplicated and can never be duplicated, and barrier to entry in Canada is way too high.
Okay. And then with respect to, does this say anything about your U.S. strategy going forward?
Well, interesting enough, we actually have a U.S. strategy, had one until the primary opportunity came along. So we have a platform that we've been thinking about. We have a platform that we've been working on that's going to take a backseat right now. This obviously decreases our U.S. exposure from around 25% to around 17%, enabling us to increase further our U.S. exposure and our user expansion where the cap rates are higher or returns are higher. But again, that's just what falls to the bottom line is one of the advantages of this transaction. The advantage is the Canadian content, which will drive us to be able to go ahead and increase our exposure elsewhere. United States is interesting also because a lot of our assets in the United States are retail. Primaris does have the ability to take on Canadian, or not only our U.S., but our Canadian retail platform and consolidate Primaris as the manager, as the portfolio manager, as the asset manager for potentially all of our retail portfolio.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Mario.
Your next question comes from the line of Karen McIndoe with BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Oh, thanks. So, Tom, I'm just going to ask you about the bow. Just kidding.
Oh, wow, that's a relief. So what is the bow exactly? I forget now.
I'm kidding.
Okay, small little thing relative.
Okay, so on the management side, who in head office are you going to be retaining? Has that been sorted through? Can you comment on who goes, who stays?
Yeah, as far as the bow goes, we got rid of Randy Ersman. Come on, Corrine, that was a good answer.
I'm smiling.
Early days, Corrine.
Well, I asked a question.
I know, no answers as far as the staffing goes. We're not at that stage of the game yet.
Okay. Now, you went through somewhat of a scripted answer on the fee situation. I want to clarify that. So on this deal, you will not be taking acquisition fees?
Corrine, go back, read the notes. It was scripted on purpose. The answer is within the words I already stated.
Okay, well, can
you try to read
help
it carefully
this
time, Corrine. Corrine, you know the answer. Stop it already. We've already answered that question, Corrine.
What's the answer?
Read it again later.
Okay. Property management fees?
We've answered that question, Corrine. Well, this is going to be an attorney-managed platform within Primaris. The management contract will be renegotiated. We'll attempt to finish the conclusion of that renegotiation and release it within the circular, but in either event prior to the unit holder vote. Which part of this don't you understand?
Okay, we'll move on. In terms of the strategic logic for the deal, typically, H&R goes after single tenant, long lease term, and matches the mortgages. So this is a change in strategic direction. Do you see other changes happening to the H&R entity, perhaps, SpinCos that are property type specific? Do you envision any of that happening, or this is going to be a single H&R REIT larger company for the foreseeable future?
Where the future takes us, we don't know. This opportunity wasn't available to us 3 months ago. So right now, we'll take Primaris, digest it as a retail platform, and we are acquiring the retail platform that gives us access to grow this platform, to grow this asset base. Beyond that, we can't comment.
Okay, that's it for me. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Dennis Mitchell with Century Investments. Your line is open.
Oh, Tom, you're in a feisty mood today. Congratulations.
Just with Corrine, not with you, Dennis, never with you.
Never with me. That's because I'm much too big for you to take on, I guess,
That's definitely true.
Well, congratulations to both of you on the transaction. Most of my questions have been asked and answered. I take it you're not going to provide any more color on asset and property and acquisition fee, but maybe we can talk about it offline.
Okay,
well, listen, congratulations. Most of the stuff I wanted to ask has already been asked, and we'll circle back offline. Thanks, guys.
Okay, cheers.
Your next question comes from the line of Pammy Beer with Scotiabank. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning. John, can you maybe comment on the process that was undertaken and perhaps a bit of background on maybe the number of parties that went through the data room and how many perhaps credible proposals there were prior to the decision to accept the H&R's offer?
Yeah, sure, Pommy. Well, as you know, our Board of Trustees formed a special independent committee to deal with the matter. From that, we retained Canaccord Genuity as our advisors, and we also brought in a group called Evercore. Canaccord took the lead. They had obviously great knowledge of the Canadian market, and Evercore took the lead on the United States and other parts of the world. We did a global search. We did set up a data room. We had many companies in there looking at Primaris. And all this process went on, essentially started the day after the announcement that a bid was coming in, and we worked right through the holiday season. And what you're hearing now and read last night is essentially the result of all that work.
So were there other in the press release there was an indication of other proposals were submitted. Is that correct?
Yes, there were. There were other parties that were very interested in Primaris, interested in not only the assets but the Canadian aspect to it. You know, we had a bit of a horse race, and H&R crossed the line.
So was this the highest offer, or what made the other offers inferior?
Pommy, I think we're going to take the lowest offer.
I didn't think so, but, right. I mean, was there something in this that, I mean, from
well, take a look what's happening here. This is going to be a very compelling company. This is... You know, and we've said this. And I took the view as well as others. This is going to emulate what a lot of the largest Canadian pension plans are doing around their real estate investments. I mean, this is going to be a significantly sized, diversified real estate company with tremendous assets in Canada and the United States. So I think this is a terrific outcome.
And then just lastly, on the description of the parties, were there any pension funds in there?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Neil Downey with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. Can we just visit the break fee for a second? With a $107 million value, there's several components to it, which I would describe as maybe being a little unconventional in terms of a cash and an option value. What was the thought process behind the property purchase options?
Neil, I think if you look at the real estate world, you'd say, yeah, it's probably unconventional that you'd see an option to buy properties, but we actually looked at other precedents in terms of other M&A activity in other industry sectors and actually found that it's actually not that unusual. So, I think if you look at the amount of the break fee in relation to the overall bid, it's well within. As a matter of fact, you could argue it's below the norm in terms of the percentage. We took a view that it was fair and it made sense.
Okay. The the option component of roughly $37 million of ascribed value is relative to the appraised values for Dufferin Mall and the Yonge Street Assembly. What's the date or the reference for the appraisals? Would that be like a third quarter, like a September 30th appraised value, or something that's been updated, or how do I think about that?
Think about the third quarter.
Okay. So, okay. Tom,
Neil, to help you out on this point.
Yeah.
The reason why it's unorthodox, and one of the reasons that H&R went after this type of concept, is because we're going to be putting aside a substantial amount of money for this transaction. If the transaction doesn't happen, we'll be sitting with cash that may be dilutive. So we automatically, through this formula, have a use of proceeds.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess slightly dilutive to earnings, but certainly not dilutive to value, which is really what I focus on. So I was just trying to get a better understanding as to...
Sorry, slightly dilutive to earnings of H&R?
Yes.
Okay,
if you sat around with excess cash.
Oh, the cash, correct.
Yeah.
Therefore, we have a use of proceeds on assets that are best in their class, prime grade assets that are very liquid, that we can always sell at any time. And therefore, that gives us the ability to have an immediate use of proceeds that are accretive, don't have the dilution of the cash, and if you ever want to sell them, we can sell them.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Tom, have you spoken to DBRS? And if so, what's their comments or view on this? Because, you're going to be drawing down a fair amount of short-term debt, which I suppose would make a lot of sense to replace with term financing on an expeditious schedule.
So the simple answer to the question is no, we did not want to speak to DBRS. We didn't want to speak to anybody. As you notice, we don't even have an investment banker because we wanted to leave this as tight-lipped as possible. That being said, since we are not increasing our overall debt to gross, we don't believe that they'll have a problem with. They have rated recently, as you well know, Primaris. And since they're comfortable both with the Primaris and the H&R ratings that they've given, the platforms that we have, and the combination only strengthens the company, we have no real concern that they will do anything other than view this in a very positive light.
Okay. And to finish up, can you comment on total expected transactional costs with relation to the combined business as it relates to advisory, legal fees, severance, restructuring, et cetera? In round numbers, is this a $25 million number or $40 million number? How big is it?
We're using the number 40, or $40 million.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Steve Velgott with ICAP. Your line is open.
Thank you. Fairly straightforward question for me. Is the plan to coordinate the dividends, and if not, if the deal were to close before the Primaris March dividend but after H&R's March dividend, is there any compensation to Primaris shareholders for that in terms of a prorated dividend or anything?
There's Louis Forbes speaking. There's no plan in place other than E-Treat will continue their normal monthly distributions until we get smarter about a closing date.
We're anticipating closing at the end of March 31st, and that will avoid all issues on that count.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Chris Tuzo with GGT. Your line is open. Chris Tuzo with GGT, your line is open. Hey, your next question comes from the line of Ben Pass with GLG. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. Just a question. As comprehensive as this process was, ahead of agreeing to this transaction with H&R, was Kingset allowed to put in what could be deemed their best and final offer?
We at the very beginning of the process, there was a reach out to Kingset on behalf by our advisors to open the doors, inviting them to come back and speak at any point during the process. And to the best of our knowledge, they never did that.
And it wouldn't have been a logical conclusion if the process was coming to an end, given that there looked to be a fully financed transaction at a comparable price to what you announced today, that it wouldn't be reasonable to go back to that party and ask if they had any interest again, since it, you clearly showed good faith in the beginning of the process?
The process is still open and ongoing, and they're invited to pick up the phone like anybody else.
As it pertains to the Duffer and Moll asset sale, did Primaris go out and market that asset to assess fair value to any other party other than H&R?
No, we did not. They didn't go to assess it to anybody. It's part of the IFRS process and updated appraisals.
And, it just seems a little peculiar to me that given you're representing this as a $28 deal, but the election alone really prevents anyone from truly achieving that $28 value creation. So at the end of the day...
Sorry, I'm losing you on this. The only time that there's a break fee is if H&R is not successful in acquiring a primary, someone else comes forward in simple terms.
No, what's so surprising to me is you mentioned the precedent transactions that you looked at. How many of those precedent transactions were at a price comparable to the agreed-upon deal whereby which you were willing to give up so much in the break fee in addition to straight dollar economics, but actually the asset value of the company? Could you just give us a sense as to how many transactions you looked at, what percentage represented similar dynamics to this exact transaction?
Yeah, the look back on precedent transactions covers a longer period of time, many industries. Asset options are not unusual.
Oh, so it wasn't just REIT transactions. It was transactions in any particular industry.
Yes.
Okay. Were those all unsolicited transactions?
Sorry, no. The break fee, just to respond, the break fee is a market break fee. A portion of that break fee has been translated into an option. But that's the only wrinkle. It's not the amount of the break fee.
And there is precedent to that as well.
Yeah.
No, I'm just trying to get a sense of, given I haven't, maybe I'm new to this space, I haven't seen a lot of break fees represented in not sheer just dollar economics, but an quantifiable value of an asset being part of that break fee. I'm just trying to get a sense as to how many precedents the board looked at when they evaluated that. It doesn't seem like a meaningfully larger premium to the Kingset fully financed offer to give away such value without having a full appreciation of what that value may be worth to any other, interested party. That's why I'm trying to get a sense as to the depth of the process of evaluating the value to which you gave up as part of this deal.
I don't know if it helps, but the assets that are subject to the option represent less than 5% of the total enterprise value. So I don't know if that's relevant context to your line of question.
I don't know if that's the value that you were able to get as part of this deal, but to another bidder, could it have been much more significant?
No, not at all. Real estate values within a portfolio don't move against one another that much. So whether it's a 4.9% of the last quarter and 4.8% of the portfolio this quarter, if things move, it's on that order of magnitude. And
value is value. 5% is, to me, is 5%. That's meaningful value.
Okay.
And just did the board take into consideration if someone were to challenge this break fee in the court, how that would be viewed? Have there been challenges in any of the precedents that you examined as part of accepting this transaction?
Can't comment on that. We don't know.
You don't know because you didn't look at it, or because you looked at it and the answers are unclear?
The board,
I'm just trying to get a sense from a shareholder's perspective as they evaluate their options as we go into this vote, given, it's there was a fully financed offer at a reasonable premium that could have gone higher and they didn't have a look back. If someone did want to challenge that as part of putting out an alternative transaction, how has the board viewed that in the analysis done over the life of this process?
The board analyzed the fairness of the break fee and are of the opinion and received advice that it is a fair and market break fee. There's no additional value beyond the break fee suggested by that option. The normal break fee was reduced by the value of the option.
No, I get the economics. I'm just trying to understand. It seems quite unique to me. I have not read a lot of press releases with a hybrid break fee structure and a transaction similar with this dynamics. If the premium was significantly more than Kingset, I guess I could understand it, but it doesn't really seem that way to me.
Well, we're not going anywhere on this line of question. I think
okay.
I think we've tried to give you the information we've got. If you have another line of point, feel free to tailor your question.
Oh, just one more. I have one more question. As part of the process that you ran with all the other interested parties that participated in the data room and looked at the company, were there any other transactions at a at a cash value that may be higher than the value presented by H&R? But the view of the board was that because of the equity and the pro forma economics being able to be an owner of the combined entity, those were not attractive offers.
This was the best proposal for us to accept.
No, but were there other offers that were higher in cash value?
I can't comment on what was going on in the data room and what came out of the data room because that's confidential. But this is in our view, without a doubt, the best scenario.
Okay, so there could have been higher cash offers, but
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm not saying that. Don't.
That's why I'm not clear. I'm sorry?
Don't misread what I'm saying.
Oh. How should I read it?
But this is the best offer.
Okay.
And there wasn't a higher cash offer.
And there was
a higher cash offer.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Drew Figdor with Tideman Group. Your line is open.
Hi, this is actually Matt Lubman here. I'd like to push a little bit further on the question of the break fee. Can you help me understand a little bit why you selected the Yonge Street properties and, the other mall? What in particular made those the assets that you thought were the right ones? Was it redevelopment opportunities or something else about them?
No, it's actually redevelopment. If we're not going to be buying a platform, they're Toronto-based. Our head office is Toronto. They're easiest for us to manage. It's pretty hard for us to go to Halifax or to BC and manage these properties without a platform.
So it's primarily the location because of your large investments in the greater Toronto area. Do you see redevelopment opportunities with those particular properties?
Well, no. Head office of H&R is on Dufferin Street, so it kind of like blends in easily from a manager perspective. And we do have another operation, and we bought Atrium Bays. You're probably aware Atrium Bays is right across the street from the Yonge Street Assembly. So it's very, very logical that we can easily integrate these two operations into our existing management team.
Okay. For the folks at Primaris, could you help me understand a little bit? I mean, obviously this bid is, on a not on the headline value, but on the actual value based on yesterday's market prices, about 5% higher than the King said offer, which is all cash, which I think, some unit holders, as you guys alluded to in the script, preferred an offer with equity, but I'm sure there were other shareholders or unit holders who preferred an option with all cash. So help me understand why you guys thought it was appropriate to give away a 4%+ break fee in exchange for an offer that was 5% over the other offer that you have. It seems like the size of the break fee is the same as the size of the premium that you received. You claimed in response to a previous question that the process is still open, but it looks to me that with the size of the break fee you've agreed to, frankly, the process is closed.
First of all, let me correct you on the way you characterize the break fee. I think it's 3.8% if you do the math, not 4+. Maybe not a big difference depending on what your 4+ was. And it was the best offer on the table.
Okay. And so now you guys in your reviews of these precedent break fees, to be clear, these were in the context of this sort of unsolicited transaction, small premium over the other transaction offer that you had, as opposed to being for companies that were in unique situations.
What's the question?
I wanted to understand a little bit when you considered the precedence was you justified this break fee, because I think a lot of people are looking at this, at least in our eyes, I'll respect your investment bankers, but in the eyes of me as an investor, I can't recall the last time I saw a break fee structured quite like this, which is why I think it's drawn so much attention. Trying to understand is why you guys felt that a uniquely structured and seemingly fairly large break fee was appropriate in the context of an offer that's approximately 5% higher than the cash offer that you had on the table.
It's the break fee needs to be looked at within the context of both the equity value of the business and the enterprise value of the business. And within the context of the enterprise, compared to comparable transactions, this break fee is, as John said earlier, a little bit below average.
Okay. The one last question I wanted to ask on this topic was, is there a trigger for reducing the size of this break fee? is there anything in terms of, like, if somebody moves in a shorter period of time, because I know you guys expressed concern over having capital lie fallow for an extended period of time. So logically, you would think that if somebody moved an offer in the next couple weeks, that some of those concerns that require this unique break fee structure would be mitigated.
No.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Phil Newston with BNP Paribas. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Congratulations on the deal. Just wanted to go over the dividends on both Primaris and H&R. Just wanted to see if there's going to be any changes for either of them in terms of, is there a set cap in terms of what the dividend is going to be?
No.
So it's going to be, so it's going to be the same as it was for month of January going forward?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
What happens, I guess, for those shareholders who choose to not elect? Is, are they subject to the prorate, or what is the default consideration there?
Any unit holder that does not make an election will default to the unit delivery.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Ron Mayers with LB Securities. Your line is open.
Good morning. Just to be clear on the break fee, that break fee would be payable in the event that the unit holders of Primaris fail to approve the transaction. In other words, if you didn't get your two-thirds?
Correct.
Thanks.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll now turn the call back over to the presenters.
Thank you, operator, and thank you again for participating, everybody, in the call. We have an investor presentation on each of our websites, and we look forward to meeting with many of you over the coming weeks. Have a good day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.